Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Does it ever feel like you're a marketing professional just
speaking into the void?
Well, with LinkedIn ads, you can know you're reaching the right decision makers. You can even target buyers by job title, industry, company, seniority, skills. Wait, did I say job title yet? Get started today and see how you can avoid the void and reach the right buyers with LinkedIn ads. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe, and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Daniel Sachs, CEO of Landbase.
I think that era of software, including business software, was all driven by what is the amount of hours that someone spends in your tool? What's the amount of clicks? What's the amount of followers? And I think those are all the wrong metrics. My kind of goals with Landbase and agentic AI is the opposite. It's actually like how little amount of time does a human have to spend in the software, but how much impact does the software make for the human so they can have more time to do what they love?
This is Daniel. His entrepreneurial journey has deep roots in a 100-year-old family business. He grew up in Niagara Falls, Canada, where his family owned a furniture store founded by his great-great-grandparents in 1908. However, in 2009, the recession forced the century-old family business to close, which became a pivotal moment in Daniel's life. Instead of lamenting the loss, he was inspired to explore how technology could have saved small businesses like his family store. This experience led him to co-found AppDirect, a B2B subscription commerce platform that grew to generate well over $3 billion in annual transaction revenue. And in May 2023, he co-founded Landbase, which he leads as a CEO. He sees Landbase as his second business, with a continued mission of helping B2B businesses or entrepreneurs thrive. This time, the focus is on applying agentic AI to go-to-market strategies. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Daniel to my podcast. We explore what's broken in the way companies still automate today. Daniel shares his compelling vision for the future of B2B SaaS powered by agentic AI, thereby creating a 5x larger market than today's software industry. He discusses how companies can achieve significantly better results while allowing executives to reclaim their day. He also explains how this new technology can help build digital credibility, which is essential for companies to stand out. And by listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, what he's doing differently to create defensible differentiation. Secondly, his approach to helping his customers avoid waste of resource and money as they speed up their go-to-market activities. Thirdly, why he advises against imposing previous playbooks and values on new ventures. And lastly, what he learned from speaking to customers about their biggest pain points that helped him to build far better products. Well, hi, Daniel. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
So happy to be here.
Yeah, that's likewise, by the way. And I think I reached out to you because I saw your funding announcement on Strictly VC. And then I started looking into like what is land-based all about. And I was, yeah, this is something that I'd like to cover on the podcast. I like the vision behind it. I like the drive. So here we are. So before we're going to talk about the company and then what you're up to, the mission that you're on, what drives you? What do you get energy from as a person?
Well, I love you use the word energy because I think energy is like one of the most powerful tools in life. And I really just have, I call it like conviction. So I feel like when I have a vision, I want to do everything I can to, you know, meet or exceed that vision and take something that's not a reality today and turn it into reality tomorrow. So this is my second business with Landbase. Consistently, the vision is really helping B2B businesses or entrepreneurs thrive. That's been what drives me and what gives me energy. And I find when I'm around people and in nature and doing the things that I love, I feel that energy and I want to get that conviction and that vision out into the world.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I saw, which is maybe even unusual if you see it, is like give people their time back. And you literally mean it because you just touched upon it, you know, being in nature and being with family and yeah, getting your time back to do those type of things. But yeah, is there more behind it?
Yeah, the mantra with Landbase, my new business, is the concept of reclaiming your day. And the philosophy is like, there's no regrets I ever have in life, but I want to make sure that I'm making the most of every moment and doing the things that I love. And to your choice on energy, you know, feeling that positivity and feeling like I'm having a good time. And I think that while business is super important and super valuable, there's a lot of things that we have to do in business that, you know, don't necessarily leverage our strengths or our energy. A lot of manual repetitive tasks, a lot of things that, you know, where we're stuck in front of our screen. And I find like what drains my energy is kind of when I'm stuck in a software tool, just like doing the mundane tasks. So the kind of whole goal with Landbase is to free people up so they can reclaim their day and do more of what they love. And I think that technology has the propensity to make us less human. You know, particularly if we're just stuck in front of a screen, you've probably felt it where you can sometimes have anxiety or you feel a little off if you're just, you know, sitting at home and, all day. But if you can reclaim your day, you can get out into nature, you can go have fun. It really transforms the way you feel and you live and you make others feel great. So the whole goal about Landbase is that you shouldn't have to work for your software or live in your software, but your software should work for you. So you can get out there and do the things you love.
Well, just playing devil's advocate here. Isn't that what all software has always been about? So what is different now?
Yeah, it's actually a great question. So I think, okay, so let's like flip a coin, right? So you take the pessimistic side. Think 10 years out, okay? In one way, you could be like, we're going to be addicted to our screens. We're going to be living in a metaverse. We might have a Neuralink plug into our head. Climate might be screwed with plastics. And, you know, there may be extreme war with drones and everything like that. And we might be living in a world where there's fertility challenges. And it's just really not a world that, you know, I'd want to live in.
No.
But let's like flip that coin and say 10 years out, what if there's a world where our AI or our software actually does the manual repetitive tasks or the challenging problems that, you know, machine intelligence can harness, but that human brains can't. And that really frees us up to do the higher level tasks, to do the things we love and to kind of reconnect with the way we used to live, stronger relationships with people, taking our clients out in real life, spending more time with our kids, maybe finding kind of passion for philanthropy, whether it's innovating or investing in climate technology or biotech or life sciences. And maybe we find cures to the biggest challenges that face us as humanity. And we live in a world where people are more human again, the planet's starting to recover, we all get out in nature together. And really the AI enables us to do the things that we thought weren't possible before to kind of reclaim our day, but also reclaim our life and reclaim the planet. So that's what That's what I think could be a world. And that's what I have conviction in. That's what I want to make a reality.
Sounds like a big dream to come true. Big idea. I mean, and I think I like your big thinking here. But if you look at like all the technology that's being out there, I mean, if I go back when I was still working at Unit 4, let's say 2016, we were also talking about repetitive tasks and you don't need to do them. Those type of things. And we were talking in connection, for example, to timesheet or to doing your expenses and those type of things that everybody hates still need to be done. And of course, that has evolved over the last couple of years. What I've seen is that you're betting on a next wave of AI, agentic AI. Is that then the key to solving that once and for all? I mean, why did you pick agentic AI and not, for example, generative AI, like the majority of the world is doing?
Yeah, you used the right word earlier, like, you know, big dreams, big ambitions. So the kind of secret that if I were to tell someone a secret now in 2024, it's that large action models. So agentic, you use the technical term, right? Agentic AI, I think, is going to be 5 times bigger than the software market today and unlock really next level power that the economy has never seen before. And one thing I really got right in my career was I graduated, happened to be in San Francisco, and learned about software as a service when it was in its infancy. And this was when like Shopify, DocuSign, EcoSign, Box, Dropbox, MailChimp, they were all in their like seed or series A. I got to know all the founders. It was really hard to find more than 100 SaaS companies at the time. And my belief from kind of growing up in a family business and understanding the power that this could unlock by being able to subscribe to these software tools, I had a strong conviction in it. And what's wild is that 100 kind of software tools that maybe had a collective market cap of less than $1 billion at the time is now trillions in market cap and has had so much impact on the world. Now, you're right that there was a promise of automation and there was a promise of productivity. And the reality is software as a service unlocked dramatic productivity. I mean, imagine what would have happened in the pandemic if we didn't have digital tools and we couldn't work from home, right? We're able to do so much more now than we could have, and the pace is moving faster. Now, I think the biggest challenge is that in this SaaS era, what technologists or product managers were gold on was engagement in the tool. Like, how do you get people addicted to your software? And I think one of the biggest kind of, I think people still, like, they're excited about Meta now and say that it's great. And I'm a big champion of technology, so I kind of feel bad saying this, but I think like what Facebook did with their services or Instagram, it's just like warping people's brains. I personally have never faced addiction, but I did feel that I was addicted to Instagram, and I'd just be on it all the time. I'd have FOMO seeing my friends going out, and then I'd have do I post this picture or did not post this picture? What do people feel? And essentially my daughter was born in May of 2020. And that morning I was like figuring out like, oh, what's the cutest picture of my wife and my daughter that I can post? And I just said like, look, this is not a way to live life. I hard deleted Instagram. It's kind of random, but it was like the hardest thing I ever had to do. People are like, oh, you built this, multi-billion-dollar business. What's the hardest thing you had to do? And honestly, it was just like my struggle with Instagram. So I think that era of software, including business software, was all driven by what is the amount of hours that someone spends in your tool? What's the amount of clicks? What's the amount of followers? And I think those are all the wrong metrics. I think they're fine if you want to get addicted to software, but I think that the promise of agentic AI is actually the opposite. So agentic AI, or AI that takes action on your behalf, where essentially you don't have to work for your software, but your software works for you, the whole business model can change. So I see my kind of goals with land-based and agentic AI as the opposite. It's actually like how little amount of time does a human have to spend in the software, but how much impact does the software make for the human so they can have more time to do what they love?
Let me make a small interruption here. Daniel just made an excellent remark that set land-based instantly apart from its competitors. instead of optimizing for increased daily average use time, they optimize for increased daily impact generated. This shift towards meaningful outcomes instead of meaningless inputs changes the concept about what software should be really all about. It's a trait remarkable software companies master. They focus on the essence, deeply understand what users and companies value and desire, then create new value possibilities in a way that's different and not just better. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
And like another thing I would do, like just kind of like painting this picture of what could things look like in, you know, 10 years, but it could even be sooner. I think that if you're familiar, like you mentioned generative AI. So generative AI, essentially a human would prompt and it understands text and natural language and it can output an answer. And so right now, like humans prompt AI. I think in the future, AI can prompt humans, and humans in general, especially as a collective organization within a work environment, are pretty bad at making decisions. So if you think about the average like meeting, right? People debate back and forth. They bring like so many ideas to the table, but it's actually hard to frame a decision in the form of a prompt where you can just say yes or no. But machine intelligence is really good at being able to distill something with data and frame something in a way that a human can respond. So my view is that one of the biggest ways that you can free up your day is if AI can frame or prompt a question to someone in a way that they can make a decisive decision. So imagine instead of debating for an hour, instead of being stuck in your software tool, you just have a watch, right? And your watch prompts you with something. There's a trigger out there like, hey, you gave the example where you had to learn about us on Strictly VC or maybe doing some manual like reading of the newsletter. Imagine like Strictly VC comes out and says, hey, this is the perfect person to have on your podcast. Swipe right to say yes and invite. Swipe left to say no. And all you have to do, you could be golfing, you could be horseback riding. You just get the prompt, make the decision, and then I show up on your podcast. You don't have to do anything. Like that's an example of how, the AI could prompt us versus the, us prompting AI. And therefore, the software can work for you, make it easier for you to make decisions.
Yeah, I like that you give kind of an anecdote like that. I also saw a recent post from you on LinkedIn whereby you talked about like what happened over the last 2 months, I guess, in terms of the number of meetings that you've been involved in and booked and had to, of course, deal with potential customers and so on. Whereby I think the last part of the post was that you didn't have to do a single thing because it was all organized for you through the platform.
Yeah. I mean, what's unbelievable. So just for context, the vision with LandBase was saying, how do we help businesses with the biggest problem that they have, which is generating leads that convert into revenue. And because of agentic AI or AI that takes action on your behalf, it's now possible that you can harness machine intelligence and top human performance to be able to unlock and execute activities that help you automate your go-to-market and help you generate leads. So previously, in order for me to book 100 meetings at my prior company, I would have needed to hire a team of SDRs. I would have needed to source 10 software tools, stitch them all together. It would have been very, very expensive. And I would have needed my assistant to schedule meetings, and I would have needed someone to qualify them, and I would have needed a person to manually brief me, and I would have needed 15 minutes in between to study the company that I'm speaking to. But essentially, with LandBase and AI, everything was automated. So yeah, you're right that I actually had to pull back a little bit, but 2 weeks ago I had 100 meetings. So it was 50 hours of meetings back to back in half hour increments, no breaks. And essentially no assistant, no sales development reps, just LandBase booking everything. I had my meetings, my meeting briefing and research prepped with me. It was all scheduled and it was all qualified and it was amazing. And you know what I did? So part of the kind of brand with LandBase with Reclaiming Your Day is kind of like making it okay that you can do things that previously wouldn't have been professional. So I feel like in my last job, I was in my 20s and I was selling to Fortune 500 executives and I would wear a suit and tie and I'd be, early to every meeting, and I'd have a printed binded deck, and I was very professional. And with this new business, I want to make it more human. So I used to like freak out if my dog was barking, or I wouldn't want my kids to come on screen. But in those, 50 hours that I had of meetings, I was on a hike, on a bike, had my kids sitting with me, there. I would, eat in front of, the screen. And I'd tell people, hey, I hope you don't mind, but I'm reclaiming my day. I want to meet with you, but, I've been in front of the screen. I want to take some time. And you know what? It just gave me so much energy and charge. And I feel like people responded positively to it. So I definitely feel that, life's too short to, live a certain way just because you think it's professional or going to give you an edge. I feel like people are becoming more forgiving and
it is, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Exactly. I think the only thing that, that made me laugh, but maybe I'm wrong here, that you lost your voice at the end of the 50 hours, but.
Oh, I totally lost my voice. I had a weekend of silence. Yeah.
Tell us again, okay, we have to find the balance on that level as well. But it's impressive what you were just telling, because I think for a lot of people it will sound impossible or unthinkable, but this is where I think the world is going indeed. So kind of going a little bit back to when you found the company, I saw that this May 2023, and I know, of course, that technology allows us to build extremely fast these days. I mean, it shows here again, May 2023, that's a little bit more than a year ago. What has been a fundamental choice that you made at the early start that is now proving the right choice for the success that you're seeing so far?
I think the key, my secret to success is you want to ride a wave that's going to be bigger than even you can be. So with SaaS in 2009, I kind of felt like, look, this is the thing that I want to, build my career around. And I co-founded AppDirect, which is the largest commerce platform that sells technology. We've done about $15 billion in cumulative sales, helping millions of businesses access technologies. Fast forward to today, I think it's the just kind of backing agentic AI and hiring the best people that are experts in that field. Yeah. So with AppDirect, my last company, the key was understanding multi-tenancy, which was kind of an early trait or technical kind of component of the cloud software. And I hired Andy Sen, who was the head of the Salesforce AppExchange at the time, which was really its only kind of app store for business. And he became our CTO and really transformed things. And I think with this business, I'm grateful to have assembled a team that's just, focused and phenomenally steadfast on building and leveraging machine intelligence for go-to-market and helping businesses. So my team includes Hua Gao, who is a Stanford PhD in neural networks that co-founded EverString, which is one of the first machine learning platforms for go-to-market. His colleague, Yi Jin, who is a NASA rocket scientist termed growth marketer. Emily Zhang, who I met in 2011. She wrote actually the Harvard Business School case study on AppDirect. So at one point, there's a case study on us. We got to go to Harvard and kind of talk to the class around key decisions. But she was the student that wrote the case. She went on to eBay to run some of their early machine learning initiatives and AI initiatives, then was early at Carta and kind of was there from day one to their $8 billion round, and then co-founded Oyster, which was one of the fastest growing companies of all time. It went from 1 to 12 million in less than a year. So she joined, and then I brought on Raheem, our CTO, who was kind of the best engineer that I had worked with at AppDirect. But I think to your point, like the thing I would say is that, life is not team. About the technology, it's about the team. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, funny, yeah. Yeah, because everybody think, okay, this is technology world. It's all about technology. But at the end, it's the team it's the imagination of the team and their ability to think bigger than average, to take things, outside of what we become used to or that we can even imagine. Fascinating. What I also hear between the lines is that, yes, it's the team. Yes, it's riding that big wave. But it's also the focus that you chose. Because what I learned so far is that Landbase is really focused on the whole go-to-market motion and nothing beyond it. Because if you look at it from a perspective, okay, it allows you to automate things and like work for you. You could take that everywhere. Why did you take that choice to deliberately focus on go-to-market?
Great question. Well, the thing I'd say is, okay, so as an entrepreneur, there's a lot of things I'm not good at, and I feel like I have some level of awareness for my weaknesses. But one of the things that I'm particularly bad at is focus, to be honest. I like doing a lot. I like having a big vision. And, you know, I think like Sequoia, Mike Moritz, who was one of the kind of partners, leaders there, always talked about how, you know, the key thing that you need as an entrepreneur is focus. And there was a playbook with Y Combinator back in the day, or the Lean Startup methodology with Eric Ries, where you start by creating a very focused product for a very focused ICP. So think about like one point solution, and you want people to love it, and then you want to grow it out. My belief as like a first principles thinker is that if you follow the playbook that existed in the past, it's not going to, you know, have a great outcome. It's not going to have a crazy outcome, right? So if you want to have big ambitions, you have to kind of rethink models. And my view is that if you're focused on one thing, so if you were to say, hey, Dan, I realized that you did outbound email, like, wow, that's focused, right? I would say, yeah, that could be focused. If I started by doing outbound email for insurance agents, right? But I think what we're trying to do is pretty broad, which is any activity that we went on with sales and marketing generally is with the goal of generating revenue. And that starts with generating a lead. So people think of like, sales development, that's a sales function. But actually, everything that marketing does, the goal is to generate a lead, marketing qualified lead that converts into a sales qualified lead. So yeah. our focus, and the reason why we chose the term go to market, is actually to intelligently automate all components of the go to market. So I actually find it not to be focused at all, because my ambition and even our short term product aperture includes outbound. So that's helping you do email, phone, LinkedIn. Outbound communication, nurture, which is helping you nurture people coming to your website. So we can embed a pixel in your website. We can understand who's coming to the website, and we can help engage them with custom content. And then inbound. So that's really marketing elements of how do you build digital credibility through things like blogs, white papers, SEO backlinks, managing your reputation online, PR, eventually ads. So I would say, I'm very honored that you call it focus, but I think I'm actually like totally scattered doing a lot of things. And definitely my ambition to your point is I think like I admire Salesforce and Mark Benioff because he did more than just start a SaaS company. He started a movement of what SaaS became, advocated for the delivery model, had conferences, evangelized the market. And, you know, one of the things that he was always proud about is that the Salesforce ecosystem created multiple dollars for every dollar that Salesforce brought in revenue. So I think that there was a ratio of 5-to-1 or something like that. And I think that's pretty cool because, you know, it takes a lot of effort to build a company, but if you can build a movement, it's that much more powerful. So yeah. I think that, I think my goal or my ambition is to really help advocate for why agentic AI or AI that takes action on your behalf can kind of help humans reclaim their day, do more of what they love, be better and productive. And, hopefully a mission that can go far beyond me or land-based, but can really inspire a next generation of entrepreneurs.
Well, I think you're got a topic that definitely has that potential. So, I mean, going back to focus, I mean, maybe it's not like super focused in terms of because within go-to-market, you can pick 15 other focuses. But to me, it's more about it's in a particular domain and it's not like project management or finance or HR or et cetera. True. Yeah, because I come from the ERP world, you know? And in the ERP, it's like the whole company.
That is true. I know a lot of your listeners are somewhat of technologists, but if I were to actually give the true reason why I chose that scope, it's actually, okay, so what's so special about this like next level of AI is generative AI or large language models helped harness the world's publicly available information to be able to train models to understand natural language so you can chat with it. And now there's advancements in multimodal. So you can interact with video or create video, you can create photos. With agentic AI, it's about taking action based on data to drive an outcome. But what's really powerful if you want to harness machine intelligence is a concept called reinforcement learning with human intervention. And reinforcement learning is a concept that the machine can train itself to be smarter over time. And reinforcement learning can work best if it's optimizing for a quantitative reward. So there was a seminal exercise paper and activity done by DeepMind, which was to train a machine to beat a human at AlphaGo, which was like a game, kind of like chess or checkers or whatever. Yeah. And that was kind of like this like seminal moment where the machine harnessed intelligence and beat the best human in the world. And what I think is that the scope of technology, if you can train a reinforcement model for a reward, it can be smarter than any human can be, and it can really turbocharge outcomes. And a lot of people are using generative AI. A lot of people are saying that they're doing AI agents, which is another term for agentic AI. I think it's deminimizing the concept of agentic, which is like a lot of companies right now are saying, oh, I'm an AI agent for customer support, or I'm an AI agent for sales development. And I think like the issue with that is if you're taking a current role and just calling it an AI agent, it's kind of creepy. I mean, it kind of like deminimizes the value that a human makes. I also think like there's a lot of companies that are just calling their service a name. So, oh, it's Alice, your SDR, or Jordan, your caller. And I think like, look, I just believe technology should make you more human. It shouldn't pretend that, you know, someone's a human that they're not. So I think that agentic systems think from the ground up of like, how can you take not just one role, but how do you take a whole ecosystem of things, right? Like multiple data sources, multiple software tools, multiple humans in siloed and fragmented teams. And how do you rethink how that can be built from the ground up to harness machine intelligence with top human performance? And reinforcement learning with human intervention, it can really drive outcomes that couldn't have otherwise been possible. So going back to that point of focus, generating a lead is a quantitative reward that can be optimized through reinforcement learning if fed with the right data. So the secret sauce to Landbase, just like OpenAI has their model, like GPT 4.0, we have our model, which we call GTM 1 Omni. So GTM is go-to-market, 1 is the first, and then Omni because it's omni-channel and multimodal. And our model is special because it's fed with a lot of private data and proprietary data around context of every business in the world, as well as performance data of how campaigns perform. So we've harnessed 40 million campaigns to pre-train our model, and we did a mass machine learning exercise to be able to identify what are the secret sauces or the keys to driving a campaign that succeeds. And this could be a outbound sales campaign via email. This could be a marketing campaign. But this had never been done before, where you kind of take billions of parameters, tens of millions of businesses, and millions of campaigns to see what is the secret sauce. And what we found is that 45% of campaigns full out fail to generate one lead. I mean, like, sit with that for a second. Like, that means almost half of every campaign that people do is destined to fail. And you know what? It correlates exactly to when I speak to businesses, because I've spoke to so many businesses who say, oh, well, I hired SDRs and outbound doesn't work. Or I worked with an agency and they didn't generate any leads, or they generated leads that weren't relevant. Or I built all these software tools and didn't work. And what we actually found, and this blew my mind, to be honest, is that I always thought that the reason why it wouldn't work is because the message was off, or the SDR was bad, or the agency didn't know what they were talking about. But in this case, for the 45% of campaigns, it was actually that the sender or the seller didn't have credibility in the eyes of the buyer or the receiver. And what does that mean? You can actually quantify digital credibility in the age of AI. So if you're a startup and you're an unknown SDR, right? You don't really have a robust profile. Someone might get your message, and if they open it, they might look you up and be like, wow, there's no relevance here to what I'm doing. They're an anonymous person. Why would I trust them with my, you know, technology decision? Why would I take the time to respond to this message? But if you're a prominent person, say Michael Dell from Dell, who once emailed me, of course, I'm going to look at Michael Dell up and be like, it's Michael Dell. I want to talk to this guy. So I think you need to boost your digital credibility to have the right level of go-to-market efficiency. And the cool thing by harnessing machine intelligence is we could actually find and back into what is the secret sauce of digital credibility. And it's actually all these things you can do to boost your credibility. And it's things like making sure that you have relevant case studies and blogs to be very verticalized so people identify the pain point. It's things like making sure your website is architected in a modern and fast way. Have SEO backlinks, which is a way that the internet can kind of identify and score you better. It's things like managing your reputation. So we have this report. We have like a free set of go-to-market intelligence tools built on top of our model, GTM1 Omni. And this includes one kind of thing called the digital trust score. And all you need is your company URL. You can come to our website, put your email in, and we're going to give you a score. And what we found generally is if you score under 30, you shouldn't do any outbound. And what we found is most startups, it's really hard to get above 30. 30 to 50 or 60, you probably could do okay with outbound, but it will still cost you. But if you score 70 or above, there's still things you can improve, but your go-to-market efficiency for outbound will normally be pretty good. And what we found is that a lot of businesses aren't aware or just totally neglect certain components of their digital credibility. And for example, like even AppDirect, which was the company that I had previously started, you know, multi-billion dollar company, 1,000 employees, very robust company, but there were blind spots that I would have been never aware of. Key to that was actually managing our digital reputation. So we didn't ask our clients for reviews and, you know, people could rate you on Glassdoor or Reddit or G2. And you just, if you don't manage that, then, you know, people shape your reputation without you knowing. But that was kind of a blind spot. So I think like any business that I've shared this with, there's a blind spot and they're, you know, fascinated by the results.
100% correct. Exactly. These blind spots are all over the place for good reasons, you know, because you're just too close to the problem and that's also where complacency kicks in. I talk about it in my book. You start to tell yourself stories that, you know, how great you are and start to believe it where the world is actually a little bit of a different picture outside. So, I mean, there's a couple of things that kind of came to mind or that I noted down when you were talking about this. Fascinating story, by the way. One thing was my idea of, okay, if this is taking place like this and there is reinforcement learning assisted by humans, I started thinking, okay, lucky that the humans are still involved. But what is it going to do from a perspective of trust and ethics? Because, you know, there's all these stories around like AI taking over. How do you control that?
So trust is key. And that's what we found is that in this world, you want to, at least in my view, you want to harness machine intelligence to be able to leverage human performance. And you want to build trust. And with AI, there's a lot of risk around trust. And with go-to-market, frankly, there's a lot of risk. So as I mentioned, like 45% of campaigns fail. So the churn rates of a lot of these software tools and go-to-market are very high, or retention rates are low. And it's because people make these promises that can't be met. So one of our kind of philosophies with building trust is first, like, put the data out there and let someone know that they might not be successful with your tools so they don't waste money and then have a bad experience and then, you know, give you a bad review and ding your reputation. So I think for us, like the first thing to recognize is like, what's the parameter for trust and how do you help educate people on how they can be successful? So we don't take on customers for our product if they don't have a score and we don't think they're going to be successful. So that's one kind of way to build trust, is to make sure you're not taking people's money if they're going to fail. In the context of AI, we've all heard of some of the challenges around hallucinations, inaccurate data. The way I think about it is that bad human performance equals bad results. So we've done like tons of studies. And if you're kind of sending an irrelevant message, or if it's spammy, or if it's, just bad grammar structure, or bad results. Okay. Prompting AI just generically can also result in poor performance. If you're prompting a language model, the language model can hallucinate. It doesn't understand the context of optimizing for a reward such as generating a lead. So it's just going to give you a random answer. Now, you could prompt it and have a human in the loop and be a co-pilot and make it better. But prompting in general could result in 20, 30% of the messages just being really bad. So bad humans, bad AI, bad results, spam, lack of trust. Okay. If you can harness top human performance, you can have really good results. Historically, the top sales performers, it's a bell curve. So top sales performers are going to have a really good outcome. But hey, how do you like 7x that? It's taking machine intelligence and feeding it with all the context that only a machine can take in. So billions of parameters that your brain couldn't process, but a machine can. Feeding that to a top human that can then make a call. So similar to how I said, like, I think the form factor of the future is going to be a watch where you swipe right or left if it's prompted the right way. I do think that humans in the loop, so therefore a human can approve the outcome. That's important because you can keep the guardrails on, make sure weird stuff doesn't get sent out. So my thinking for a lot of testing is that co-pilots have 20% better impact to humans, but humans still have to be like glued to their software, spending a lot of time. They can't really harness what's coming out of prompting. But if you can do autopilot with human in the loop fed by an agentic reward model using reinforcement learning, that's where you have like the best outcomes.
Cool. Thanks for explaining that. Gives everybody, I think, a little bit more relaxed feeling on the call. Another thing that came up to me was, okay, you're building this and everything is going at light year speed at the moment when it comes to like the opportunity to build new products. What have you done, or maybe it's already enforced in the model, to create something that I call defensible differentiation? You know, how easy is this to copy by another one that has maybe more capacity or whatever the point is? And then another question is, if everybody starts to leverage your GTM Omni model with all this knowledge inside, what will it mean to differentiation of your customers?
Two great questions.
Will everybody starts the same?
Yeah. So one of the things, I love mentoring entrepreneurs. I spend about 10% of my time just mentoring different entrepreneurs. And I was grateful to have, you know, Peter Thiel and Ajay Roy and from Mithril as an investor. And he wrote the book 0 to 1, talking about first principles thinking and talking about, you know, building a monopoly with like a defensibility and moats. And my philosophy on any business is you need to know what your moat is. And when we started in the kind of wave of generative AI last year, it's really hard to identify what the moat is. There's just so much competition, so many people doing the same things. So what we kind of harnessed was twofold. One is we want a data moat in having our model, GTM1 Omni, to be ahead of the curve in terms of understanding these campaigns. So while there were a lot of language models that were very expensive to train, or while there's models for code generation, so automating engineering, or models for customer support, there actually hadn't been a go-to-market model pre-trained and reinforced for go-to-market. So the thought was, like, how do we create a technical moat? Because generally, once you're ahead, once you have users and data, it's really hard to kind of beat that inertia. So you take Uber, you take Airbnb, it's this power of data and the community and just reinforcing efforts, and it's like a snowball. Yep. So I think that was our moat. The other moat, and this was actually interesting, I had a call with Michael Ovitz. So he's like the legendary founder of CAA, the agency in LA, and he kind of has mentored and worked with some of the top actors in the world. But his kind of advice, which I thought was just super interesting, but it correlates exactly to the machine learning exercise we did around digital credibility, is that B2B entrepreneurs tend to be flat and follow the same playbook in terms of the way they market. And because people say that you have to be really focused on unit economics in the early days, people underinvest in brand and creative, and they overinvest in performance marketing. And what that does is it's just like, if you are investing in performance marketing, so let's say ads, but you don't have brand or digital credibility, people might not relate to your service and it's actually more expensive. So his thought is just take some time to think of creative brand exercises or things that relate to people and really focus on this brand building. So, you know, I think in my view, my moat will be both a data moat, probably a team moat, you know, having the technical resources or that others wouldn't have, but even more so this brand moat. And I think like that's what Mark Benioff did so well with Salesforce and kind of doing more than just starting a SaaS company, but starting a movement. And I'm hoping that we can do that with agentic AI, just around the kind of concept that you shouldn't work for your software should work for you. So yeah, those are some elements to kind of moats. To your point on customers, so you're right that if you take a rules-based approach and you revert everyone to the mean, then the results are actually going to average out. So very interesting question. And what I saw like about a year ago is that there were certain companies doing that where they feed AI with a rules-based approach and it can score things and come up with outcomes, but then everyone just reverts to the mean. So another thing that we did in terms of like a mass machine learning exercise is we looked at like, what are some of the campaigns that work? And what we found is like, this is so funny, and I don't know if you ever got this, but there was a phase where someone would take a picture of a laptop and make a photo, and they'd kind of put in the laptop a picture of like a kitten or a puppy, and then it would put your logo, and they would send that to you as a cold outbound, and someone would receive this picture of a kitten and be like, oh, this is cute, I'm going to open it, and they'd have high open rates and they have good response rates. But over time, the kind of cat got out of the bag and the kitten pictures were, you know, overexploited. And then that strategy doesn't work anymore. So what we found is, this is a machine learning term. I don't know if it's like so empathetic, but it's a technical concept, but it's called explore and exploit. So you can train machines instead of doing a rules-based approach, which is just everyone reverts to the mean and it's this one thing. Mm-hmm. You can actually use this concept where you're going to explore a different concept with the context of that specific business and a specific receiver. And explore would mean trying different strategies. So in the world of go-to-market, it could be instead of trying the kitten picture, it could be try to invite someone to an event or offer someone a gift card or give this to someone free, you know, stuff. It's like a hook or a campaign. So we essentially have templatized in our model all these campaign strategies that work. And we also push our model to try different things. And we also push the humans across our platform to use their creativity to do different things. So that's the concept of exploring. And what we found is that when you're exploring, you don't want to send out at high volume because you don't know if it's going to work. And you also don't want to send things that are not going to hit or that are going to be spammy. So what we do is we simulate, this is kind of another secret sauce, is that instead of sending messages out to test if they work or not, we actually simulate them in our model. So our model understands the context of who the seller is, who the buyer is, and predicts what's going to work and not. So we won't send anything out unless it hits like a score of 70, which means that we're dramatically reducing spam and we're uplifting conversion rates from like, if you take human baseline, we can go 4 to 7x above that human baseline, which is like 700%. It can be like game changing. So Essentially we do this exploring in our simulations and our models. We then do like small batch testing in real life. And then the concept is once you find something that you explore and works for you, it's in your best interest to exploit it. And this doesn't mean that you're taking advantage of anyone. It just means that you're taking a strategy that's relevant and works and you're getting out into the world as fast as possible. So Our models are designed to explore. And then once they find something that works, exploit it as fast as you can with as high volume as you can, because that strategy is going to work until it doesn't work. And then you have to go back into an exploration phase.
Yeah.
And that's a reason why a lot of businesses find that like, they'll try something and it works for a little bit, but then it doesn't work and then they give up. But the idea is you always have to be constantly exploring, and AI can do that. It can always be on. I can only work a certain amount of hours before I lose my voice, but AI can be always on. So you want to leverage it to explore, exploit, and do great things for you.
Fascinating. So mute to my ears, the creativity is going to be, you know, high on the list of skills to develop for people, for any business at the end. Okay, I got two more questions to ask you. You said, and that's also what I saw when I was doing my research, 2009, you co-founded AppDirect, and you know, you had that business for about 14 years. What was a lesson, or maybe one or two lessons, that you took from that business that became sort of founding principles for LandBase, or maybe even the opposite around? Like we did that, didn't work, so now we did the opposite.
Yeah, it's actually super interesting you mentioned that, because I would say that in the 15 years or so at AppDirect, I had a certain playbook, and there were certain things that we did. And one was that we had a values-based culture. So we had five values. We really reinforced those values. One was humility. One was positive mental attitude. You know, loved these things. This was like my life. And the other thing was just kind of the playbook for how we went to market, different elements. I would have thought that those would be the first things that I'd bring to the next company. But what you realize is that a company is more than just you and your experiences. It's about the people you bring in. It's about the markets you're in. It's about the customers. So instead of me prescribing my value set or my playbook on Landbase, I actually just sat back and had hundreds of conversations with business owners, asking them about their go-to-market challenges and pain points, and asking them about, you know, how did you get promoted? How do you get further in life? How do you grow your business? What are your biggest pain points? What are your personal fears? You know, what keeps you up at night? And by asking all those questions, our customers kind of told us and guided us to where we are, which is really kind of focused on helping kind of bring this notion of trust in this AI world to the forefront, helping educate people on how they can harness machine intelligence in the right way, and helping people be more human. So I'd say, to your point, the one thing I've learned is that if you can listen to your customers or your prospects and figure out what their biggest pain points are, and figure out ways to articulate them in a relatable way, you can unlock a ton of value. And I think when you start a business, every business has a different goal. It's built in a different era. Therefore, imposing a certain playbook that works somewhere may not work in the next thing. So I'm doing it a very different way this time.
Like it. I like it. Because you're right. You know, it hasn't got to do anything with like what your values are. It's what your customers try to achieve and how you can best fit with that. And likely, of course, there's a couple of those values that are going to be overlapping. And that's good, because that's where the aha moment kicks in and where the energy starts. To go back to my first words in the podcast. Last question then. From the lessons that you learned so far, what would you advise an aspiring tech CEO, SaaS CEO, or one that wants to kind of take a business to the next level, to do or to not do?
I think the advice that I always give is have conviction in your vision. So I think that not everyone in life has a vision. A lot of people struggle with that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're one of those people that has a vision, don't listen to, you know, you want to listen to a lot of people, but you want to take that and then mold it in a way that it can fit with your vision. And hopefully it's a positive vision that's going to be better for the world. But my view for an entrepreneur is you should have deep conviction in your vision, and you should listen to a ton of different stakeholders, take their feedback, but use it in a way that brings you closer to that vision or mission. And that's how you can do amazing things. The other thing, you know, you use the word energy to start the call, and you use the word energy to leave the call. But I'm a big believer in energy. And what I find is that, you know, if I'm in a city and people are unhappy, I feel it. I get unhappy. But if I'm, you know, at a concert, music, or if I'm at, you know, in nature, you know, hiking, I just feel like really happy. And, you know, I think part of my life is, how do I harness that energy and creativity? And I think that's when you do your best work. So the other thing that I'm really trying to do myself, but I also hope that others can do this as well, is really like reclaim their day so they can do more of what they love. If you're doing more of what you love, you can be more creative. In this world, machines can do a lot of the manual, you know, mundane tasks. So if you're just focused on that, you probably won't be so effective or productive in society. So I think you need to really harness your creative side. So last night I was out with friends who are artists, musicians, and, you know, it's I love kind of meeting people in different fields, and I'm a big energy guy. So I really appreciate you started and ended with energy, and I feel your energy, and I love what you're doing with the podcast, just, you know, getting the word out. So thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure. So where can people go to find out more about Landbase or to say hi to you?
Go to landbase.com. And as I mentioned, if you put in your email, we'll follow up with a free trust score. And we have a lot of go-to-market intelligence that we can provide to you. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. And my name's Daniel Sachs. And I would be really happy if you DM me. Happy to kind of give any advice and follow up directly. So.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for sharing the wisdom. I'm really going to follow you on the next stage, kind of that phase to start the movement. And who knows what we're going to be talking about in 3 or 4 years' time. I'll invite you back.
I would love that.
Thank you. And this ends my conversation with Daniel, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Daniel Sachs, CEO of Landbase. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.